Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. He's been all over the continuing fallout of the Astros scandal, including the latest from Commissioner Rob Manfred, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to BBTN now, as well as download and subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Let's talk about Daniel. A year ago, he resolved to stop putting off what he wanted to do, get into information technology. Daniel enrolled in My Computer Career and is already a few months into his IT career. Make 2020 your year. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You can start your new life as an IT pro in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time. Oh boy, the Astros in trouble. Damn, Cavaliers are in trouble. We'll also talk about the times that you have not gotten credit for your contributions to the world, because y'all love to do that. But first, all right, so All-Star Weekend has just passed. It was a very interesting All-Star Weekend. I found the game to be entertaining, the dunk contest to be entertaining, the three-point shooting contest to be entertaining. I saw a whole lot of entertainment, but I'm coming away from the weekend really with one question to ask, and I'm hoping somebody could give me an answer. Maybe, Gabe, you can. I don't know if you know the right people to answer this for me, but who in the world ran against Kyrie for Union Vice President where he won?
Yeah, that's the important question coming out of the weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, who voted for him? What was his speech? Did he run unopposed? I feel like that might be a possibility. I'd love to know what exactly his platform was under these circumstances. Like, I got all the questions as to how it is that you wind up with Kyrie as the vice president of the union. I'm not saying that he's incapable of doing a good job. I'm not saying that he isn't bright enough to do a good job. I'm just saying, would you put him in charge of anything? Like, at all?
I would have wanted to hear his campaign speech.
I would. I want to know everything about this. I want to hear what he's got going. See, my concern with putting Kyrie in charge of the union, man, is I just don't know what he's going to say. Can you imagine how frustrated Chris Paul going to be with him by the time it's over? You know, Chris Paul the one in charge. You know how mad he's going to be at Kyrie by the time it's over? I also want to know how many people showed up at that meeting and when exactly the meeting was. Like, what day? Because I don't know about you, Gabe, but, like, I learned my lesson in college. I ain't doing none of that student council ever again. I ran for an office for the hall council, you know, the in the dorm, right? Like, I ran for that. Man, I was like, I ain't never doing this ever again. I ain't running for no office that you don't get sworn into, because otherwise it just turns into a whole lot of backbiting political nonsense of people just trying to grab a little power as they can grab some power. I do not really understand the people who want to be in charge of these things unless they just like to be in charge of stuff. Like Chris Paul, for example. Gabe, you know Chris Paul was like student body president when he was in high school.
And he looks the type.
Yes, he is that guy. Like, think about this. When they had their 10-year reunion, Chris Paul was the one organizing it, right? And I feel like if Chris Paul wasn't the president, he'd still be calling the president and basically become the guy who was going to organize it. He is that dude. And all I'm asking is, y'all want to hang out with Chris Paul? But any of y'all feel like y'all want to hang out with Chris Paul? I don't think y'all want to hang out with Chris Paul. Nah, man, I remember I got on that council and I quickly looked around and I was just like, oh, no, I am not like these people at all. And keep in mind, I only won the election because at first nobody was going to run. And then I'm like, all right, cool. So then me and this other dude ran and his name came after mine in alphabetical order. So my name was first on the ballot. I have no reason to believe that my victory was about anything other than that. And so I look at Kyrie and I just want to know who else ran. You think it might have been JaVale McGee?
Why JaVale McGee?
I don't know. I mean, he might be something he wants to do. I read something yesterday, a couple days ago, rather, that said that JaVale McGee wrote and produced the song on the new Justin Bieber album. It's More Than Meets the Eye, baby.
What?
Yeah, see, you didn't know that, did you?
See? There's something new every day.
There you go. More than meets the eye. That is what's possible. I really do want to know what time that meeting is, because something tells me that meeting is scheduled at a time that is not necessarily conducive to attendance in All-Star Weekend. Like, what if they had that meeting at like 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday? How many dudes you think making that?
So you think that they scheduled the meeting purposely?
No. Not that they scheduled it purposely, but I can't think of when a good time is to schedule that union meeting. Make sure that people come. But like business, you know, we do business in the morning, man. What time do you think the average NBA player was getting back?
Yeah. And also, too, to your point earlier about CP3, the NBA is a little bit different with their players unit representatives in that they're mostly like big all-star types.
Well, that's new.
Yeah, because it used to be like Etan Thomas.
Yeah,
you people, did. And folks of that type.
Yeah, Roger Mason, basically LeBron. This is the thing about the union. The union had always been very strong for the rank and file because the union was always run by the rank and file. And so the superstars are like, look, we're not getting what we should get out of this. And so LeBron and Chris Paul decided they were going to take more of a leadership role in the union. So, like, and I guess they're different examples, right? So, like, Derek Fisher was a union president, not really a star. Isaiah Thomas was a union president, absolutely qualifies as a star. And the league has had this extended track record of the dude that runs the union seems to always get jobs. They always got a place for you to work if you used to be the president of the Players Association, which has had many people raise questions about the efficacy of the Players Association because the dudes were always getting jobs around the league. But it's a little different now where it's like Chris Paul, he don't need your job in the league. He got himself a $45 million a year contract that he ain't giving a dime back from. Not a single one. But anyway, union leader Kyrie, tell me what you think. You think it's possible that Kyrie watched The Irishman and then like decided to read some stuff on Jimmy Hoffa and then said, I want to run a union?
That might be one of the best ideas I've heard from you in a long time.
I'm just saying, do you think that could have happened? He's like, yo, he got some clout. Now, you know, Kyrie ain't trying to get snuffed, but, you know, he's like, yo, I got some clout. Okay, yeah, maybe this will work. Or you think there's some, like, YouTube videos on how to run a union?
Oh, my gosh. This is really, really, really good.
Yeah, you think there's any chance that Kyrie tried to change, like, the logo to put, like, a pyramid with an eye in it? Right?
Some Illuminati stuff?
Yes! The possibilities are endless! Endless, I tell you! Endless! Oh, and then there was the All-Star game. I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. And it seemed like the people did for the first time in a long time.
I think so here's my thing about, like, the people enjoying it and all of that, and, like, it's been a long time since they have or whatever. We always enjoy the end. Like, the end of the All-Star game is always good. And if we're being real about it, the first three quarters of this All-Star game really didn't look terribly different than the first three quarters of any other All-Star game, right? I think it was Team Giannis won the first quarter by a fairly big number. Then Team LeBron won the second quarter. They narrowed it. Then they were tied in that third quarter. And then once it got to be, like, the change to me was once that score got to be tied in the fourth quarter, it became real because now you're shooting for a target score, right? And then now it just becomes like game to 10, game to 12, like however you want to play it. And them dudes was out there. But do not forget, when was it? I want to say 2012 or 13. I can't remember which. When Dwayne Wade broke Kobe Bryant's nose. Like at the end of the game, you remember that?
Vaguely.
Oh, put it like this, Gabe. Do you remember when Kobe was out there wearing that Darkwing Duck mask?
Hell yeah.
Okay, well, this is why. That was it. Dwayne broke his nose in the All-Star game.
Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, man.
The Mickey Mouse reference. Here we go. Disney. Family company.
Look, man, that was mask. I'm just saying. It was there. Anyway, Darkwing Duck. Yeah. Anyway, that's what Kobe was rocking. But now, cats get to the end of the All-Star game, and they typically care. Right? But they cared. They were caring out there. Like, really, this is the first time I've ever seen them dudes hollering at the refs in that way in the All-Star game. Like, it looked like they was out there at the rocker. Like, it was, whew. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Cats were getting shook. Anthony Davis had that lemon booty on them free throws. James Harden was looking like lemon booty. I had people mad at me for saying James Harden looked like lemon booty. I was watching the game. James Harden was out there looking like lemon booty. Like, these cats care about winning games. Like, once you get them in that space, they care a lot, and they could not stop from caring. And that was, I greatly enjoyed the All-Star game. I also greatly enjoyed the three-point contest. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed the three-point contest, right? Because I feel like the three-point contest wind up having a greater level of suspense and kind of some up and down of the emotions, in part because them cats are out there shooting them joints from the parking lot, and some of them just couldn't make them, and so that would make you think they were scrubs, and then some of them would nail it and then get back in it. Okay, cool. You had the strategic position of the money ball. My man Davis Bertans, who looks like my man Charles Peach, who works on our TV show, had his money rack on that right wing, was killing it. I feel like I just read the scouting report on him right there. Don't leave him open right there. I don't know if he missed a single one of his joints from over there. That was fun. Can't remember who won. Was it Buddy Hield or, okay, Devin Booker finished second. Buddy Hield. He won it. Good for him. The dunk contest, did you feel as though Aaron Gordon got robbed?
Yeah, I think that our man Cortez has a point about Gordon kind of scuffing a little bit of Taco.
Yes.
But the thing is, his dunks over the course of the contest were better. Did you see Dwight's dunk, by the way?
The first one where he smiled and then tried to go all the way around, and then the Kobe one?
The one where he was, like, floating in the air?
Yes.
That one was legit.
Yo, I thought that was wildly underrated. Like, he went up, turned his back to the basket, hung in the air and smiled, and then came around. But you know what it was? Stuff people don't like about Dwight Howard. He the only person in the world people are like, yo, man, stop smiling. We sick of that.
And he kind of looked like a inflatable blimp at, like, Thanksgiving,
yes.
Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade, like kind of rotating the air,
yes,
as he was smiling.
Yeah, but we're like, yo, we done seen enough of your teeth. Too much. We've had enough. Did the Kobe tribute, nobody cared. Y'all just down on Dwight. Like, I feel like the Dwight redemption has not gone quite the way. Like, it's gone okay in the basketball sense, but y'all still don't rock with him. Then Pat Connaughton, he's all right. I was with him on the white man can't jump suit. That was a good idea. He just needed to do a better dunk. Like, his second dunk should have been his first dunk. The one where he went up, got it, put it against the backboard and dunked it. That should have been his first dunk. That second dunk, he should have left at the crib because he did not realize that that whole panel right there was like, white privilege stops here. Here. That was an 8. All you getting is an 8. We are not giving you, we don't expect you to be here, bonus points. No, sir. Not happening. They did not give him that. But Derrick Jones, I thought Derrick Jones was incredible. Like, I'm not sure that Aaron Gordon was that much better, if he was better, than Derrick Jones throughout the whole thing. But all I'm saying about Aaron Gordon is, once you decide I'm going to jump over Taco Fall, you got to jump over Taco Fall. It's not enough to just make the dunk. You got to jump over Taco Fall. Simple as that. Like, think about it like this. What if Aaron Gordon had gone up for that dunk and he got it up to the rim, the ball bounced off the rim, up in the air, and then came back down? Would you call that a made dunk? I mean, technically he made it, right? Nah, man, you got to clear it. He ain't really clear Taco Fall. And I know why he feels bad, man. Aaron Gordon might be a top 5 competitor in the history of the dunk contest. He ain't got no championship. As a result, he the Elgin Baylor of the dunk contest. I know that has to hurt, man. I know that has to feel bad. But I thought Derrick Jones was better, and I think that there's an element of entertainment involved in the idea that Dwayne Wade went 100% wrestling on this. Like, tell me that wasn't something that Bobby the Brain Heenan would do. That's right. You telling me you couldn't see Jesse the Body Ventura doing that? I can see Jesse the Body Ventura doing that, but like, all right, cool, yeah, we gonna do this, we gonna do this, we gonna do this. And then Dwayne Wade took him to a 9 also. I actually, if the plan was that they was going to make it into a tie, I blame the rest of the panel. You know why? The rest of the panel gets the blame because it sounds like, according to their plan, D. Wade was supposed to give Aaron Gordon a 10. And that way everybody else could knock him down on their end and they could make it a tie. And then they could have another one, right? But you couldn't do that, man, because that gave D. Wade too much power. D. Wade should have been one of the people who was assigned to give a 9. Because if you assign him to give a 9, he's kind of stuck in the 9 place because he couldn't give him an 8. So if you give him the 9, then everybody else does what they do and they wind up with the tie. That just sounds like poor planning to me. I don't think that's D. Wade's fault. I don't think it's his fault at all. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this, Gabe. Derrick Jones Jr. just got him a deal with Puma based off this.
I did not see that.
That's right. All Aaron right. Gordon wasn't going to get no deal based off this. He probably already got a deal. Here's a lottery pick. Derrick Jones Jr., man, his soul seen rivers. Ancient, dusky rivers. He's been some places. So, you know, this was a victory for him, and I actually enjoyed his dunks more. I feel like everybody just feel bad for Aaron Gordon, and they've heard of him more than they've heard of Derrick Jones. There you go, Derrick Jones. You get yours. Good for him. Right, I like it when the dunk contest like introduces us to somebody that we didn't know. Gabe, I know, oh, I shouldn't do this to myself, but you ever heard of D. Brown?
I have heard of D. Brown.
Not the one who went to Illinois, the one who played for the Celtics.
Well, D. Brown, who went to Illinois, I feel like it's forgotten as well. He was the best player on that Illinois team. And then their run to the title game.
You got to remember, they had Darren Williams and Luther Head.
I remember, but what I remember was that D. Brown was the best player on that team. Mm-hmm. But I digress. D. Brown is the guy who did the dunk where he put his hand behind his head.
Yeah, right? You're covering his eyes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes, no, Aaron Gordon's the one who does the dunk with his hand behind his head because he was a Karl Malone fan. And I'm asking everybody listening right now, unless you live in Utah or northern Louisiana, when have you ever met a Karl Malone fan in the wild?
In the wild?
Have you ever met a person who was like, Karl Malone is my favorite player?
Ooh,
ever.
You know what? I have not.
Not
have
a not. Single one. You ain't never met anybody. How are you Aaron Gordon's age and you're a Karl Malone fan? I guess I know who your daddy voted for, because I can't figure out how in the world you decided that you was going to be a Karl Malone fan. But anyway, yes, D. Brown covered his eyes. But see, we ain't know nothing about D. Brown until that dunk contest, and he went and rocked it, because that was when the Reebok pumps had come out. And D. Brown had the black leather joints, right? Because people wasn't really rocking the black ones. He had the black leather joints with like the orange basketball pump. And before every dunk, he would bend over, and he pumped up his shoes, and then he dunked it, and then he hit the button to let the air out of the shoes. And he introduced himself to us that day. Derrick Jones, it's been a while, I feel like, since somebody like truly introduced himself to America in a dunk contest in the way that he did. So good for him. By the way, Gabe, do you ever own a pair of Reebok pumps? By chance, they've been making them for a while.
I did not own a pair of Reebok pumps.
Let me tell you this. That was one of the great hustles of all time, the Reebok pump, because I had a pair of Reebok pumps. And what you did when you pumped up the shoes was it kind of tightened up around your ankle. That was the benefit that you got. But the reality of the situation was the idea of pumping up your shoe was cool. That was all it was. They're like, how do we sell this shoe again? Well, give them a button to push. And we were like, I'll take a button to push. And it worked. So there's that. So yeah, the All-Star game, it sounded like it was cold as hell up there though, because you know, it was in Chicago.
Yeah, when you get people for the second year in a row, because last year Toronto, tweeting out pictures of how cold it is outside, but then also screenshotting the Apple weather on their phones. Not a good look.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope everybody enjoyed it. I wanted to go just to see what Hitman was up to, but I was like, it's too damn cold, man.
Yeah. That's a missed opportunity for a man, DJ Mike Hitman.
Yeah, but it was just, ooh, man, it was just too damn cold. It was just, ooh, no. I just thought about that, and I was just like, because the thing about All-Star is this, man, you spend as much time thinking about what you're going to do as you spend actually doing stuff. And if you add All-Star, you want to be able to kind of linger, right? Like go to something, then go outside, walk around a little bit, maybe just go somewhere, catch somebody. Cold as it was up there, man, you go where you going and you go back. And that ain't just feel, that ain't feel like a good activity. One last thing though before we move to the next topic, because I know we've been talking about this All-Star game for a while. The intro, like the tribute to Chicago that they did with Common before the game was as good as anything that I've ever seen in the All-Star game. And it was a real, like I joke about the Two Americas thing, but Chicago got a whole different Two Americas situation. It is what's going on with black people in Chicago and what's going on with white people in Chicago, and never do the twain meet, right? Or I don't even know if that made sense, but you know what I mean. That was a tribute and an ode to black Chicago. In a way that, given everything that you read in news about Chicago, what's true and what's not. That was a real big deal. Like the way they showed D-Wade and showed him crying right there, like that hit him in a special way. When you hear him like going from Ben Wilson and knowing like the connection that you get with Ben Wilson to Derrick Rose and all that stuff like that. Like they really nailed it. And I don't know if everybody got it, but if you haven't seen it, go watch it again. It's really worth checking out. And then be sure to cut that shit off before Common start trying to rhyme everybody's name in the intros. Like, talk about doing some of your best work and then just deciding to wipe your keister with it. Like, that ode was fantastic. And then he was like, now let me show you how corny I can be if I really put my mind to it. The answer, pretty corny, dog.
Also, another one last thing. Aaron Gordon on Saturday signed a shoe deal with Chinese leading sports brand 361 Degrees and will serve as the new face of the company's basketball division.
Well, guess we'll never find out what he thinks about Hong Kong. We'll be back in a minute to talk about the Astros and Rob Manfred, but first, hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. And growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference, and you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones, then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen says she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. All right, man. If you're a baseball fan and you mad at us for what we're doing right now to y'all, I get it. We'll never talk about no damn baseball otherwise, but give us a cheating scandal and we are all over it. All right? So the Astros got caught cheating. All right? They got caught cheating. And now it's time for them to take their pound of flesh. Except the problem is there is no pound of flesh for the players. And I understand why there's no pound of flesh for the players. And I actually think that Major League Baseball got this part right. The only way they were going to get anybody to talk, the only way they were going to find out what was going on is if they gave full immunity. That was it. That was the only option. If they wanted to get anybody to tell them a damn thing about what was happening, they were going to have to give people full immunity. And see, here's the thing. It would be different if there were a circumstance under which guys like on other teams were going to be able to give firsthand information. Then you're not only dependent on the conspirators for info. But the only way they were going to be able to get information and to really get it was to deal with the conspirators. And so as a result, they had to give them all immunity. It's the reason why we know all the things that we know is because they gave them immunity. The flip side of the immunity, however, is they got immunity. So nothing, quote unquote, can happen to them. Now, what you get off of that is a lot of people who are furious, because nothing happened to the rogue baseball players who were cheating at the game. And I get it, because the magnitude of what they're doing is high, right? Like, what they did matters a lot more. It probably had a greater impact on any individual game than anybody's steroid use happened to have. It came from the top down. Like, it's a really nefarious sort of situation about an organization. I have to say that if I had to describe them in one word, the word would be distasteful. Like, I just find so much about how the Astros have gotten down over the last few years just to be like unseemly. It's distasteful. Like, they're whack. And so we got all this. Dusty Baker, the new manager, because nothing makes a team decide it needs some diversity quite like a cleanup, right? So Dusty out there trying to figure out what to do. And Dusty's like, hey, man, Major League Baseball got to do something to stop my guys from having these baseballs thrown at them. He is 100% correct. My thing, though, is all the people out here who ordinarily have a problem with baseball and their self-policing and the way that they go about doing it, those people are like, oh, you want somebody to protect you? Yeah, he would prefer that his players not be hit in the head with 90-mile-an-hour fastballs. I thought that was something that we could all agree upon, right? But no. All these otherwise civilized people and everything else, now they're all the way down for the vigilantes now because the Astros got caught cheating. See, part of the dilemma with the way this story is covered, and I don't even know if dilemma is the right word, but I think you'll get where I'm trying to go with this. I said this about a far more egregious situation, but it's somewhat analogous, and that's what happened at Penn State. And so in media, there was no argument for the other side. You know what I mean? Like, some people came out there early and was on some wait for the facts on Joe Paterno. He could never do such a thing. And then they saw what happened with that. And they were like, my bad, dog, right? But since there was only one side on the argument, the only way that you can differentiate yourself is to be louder and to be more fervent and to be more extreme and to be more draconian. That's the only way you can really do it when everybody looks out and understands that what happened was messed up. And so I used to do a lot of like Outside the Lines and Around the Horn and all these shows during the Penn State thing. And you would just watch as the volume ratcheted up as the time went on, because there's no, there was nothing to talk about. You understand what I mean? Like there was no conversation to be had about it. It was just, nobody hates child molestation more than I do. I'm like, damn, who's the person that's like, yo, child molestation? I mean, it's bad, but, you know, no, nobody does that. That's not how it works, all right? And so this thing with the Astros, if we're keeping it strictly to a baseball context, there is no dialing back what they were doing. Like, think about this, Gabe. Have you seen one person who's seen what they were accused of and what the report said and then came on the back end saying, I mean, it wasn't that bad?
Yeah, it's mostly them just saying that they didn't do it.
Yeah, but I've never heard anybody in this try to make the argument that what they're accused of is not as bad as people are saying. It is as bad, by and large, as people are saying, and everybody acknowledges that. So since everybody acknowledges that it's as bad as people are saying, all you can do to stand out is say how offended you are by it and to say how dedicated to vengeance you are because, as they have put it, there were no consequences and there was no punishment for the players. Now, when I start thinking about things, and I don't want to be that guy that, like, takes a sports thing and makes it into something bigger, but read the newspaper. Like, if you want to start talking about people who did not suffer consequences for something calamitous, this is really low on the list of things. This isn't going to get me to really be that offended. I understand that you're more unreasonable about these things than you are about stuff that matters, but still, this isn't the place where I'm getting all charged up about the idea that somebody got away with something. You know, this ain't it. I'm not there, but people hate that idea, and so now it's out here, you know, nobody got punished. Somebody has to be punished. We need punishment. I'm like, damn, like, when did y'all start caring this much about the world being a full circle? Like, I'm sorry, I'm not at the point in my life, even with matters that truly offend me, where I just get so offended by the idea that somebody didn't get punished. Like, I'm not built like that. I know that some of y'all are. I'm not built like that. So I've gotten to the eye-rolling portion of the program with this, and a big part of that is with this idea of like, yeah, oh, you're not going to be able to stop them from throwing at you. Let me explain something to you right fast. Yes, they can. And that's why baseball's got to stop it from happening, right? So, like, if the Astros go out there in the first game and somebody throws at a dude or two, they might be willing to deal with that, right? And then they go out there for the second game and it happens. Maybe they deal with it then. How many games you think them dudes going to be out there getting thrown at before this turns into a for-real-deal situation? Like, how much patience do you think they're supposed to have with people throwing at them? Because I don't think that can last for very long. Now, what baseball has, though, is 29 teams that feel they are entitled to exact justice. Because what you're doing here, now that you've given everybody else the high ground, everybody now thinks they the damn king. Well, I'm going to do this for the game. You're not doing this for the game. You're doing this because a situation has come up that allows you to throw at somebody with no consequence. Because the one thing we've learned about this society, and you hear it come up all the time when people get into that, if somebody did this to me or somebody did this to my family, I would da-da-da-da-da. This is a society that loves violence but understands that we got some rules that don't just let you do it all willy-nilly, and people love nothing more than to cash in on their opportunity for sanctioned violence. Once you say it's okay to be violent, people lean in on it. And so what you've got per these rules and everything else is a bunch of guys leaning in on the idea that they are now allowed to be violent. They're now allowed to be the ones who stand there. You get to be the damn sheriff. Everybody in the crowd gonna clap for you when you do this because you the man. You are working on the side of justice, right? Like, that's what all this stuff comes out here with baseball on this. And so, yeah, when Dusty Baker says, yo, you need to make sure they don't throw at my dudes, he's right. You need to make sure they don't throw at his dudes. Because at some point, if these cats didn't want to make the throwing stop, they can. I really don't know why you forget that the Astros also have pitchers who are also capable of throwing baseballs at people. And you can make the argument from there, well, that would look really bad for the Astros. Yeah, because the Astros don't look bad right now. How much worse do you think that the Astros are going to look if after being thrown at repeatedly, they decide to throw back? How many times you gonna get to throw at some dudes before somebody charges the mound for real? Like, how many, like, and I mean for real, right? You think that if these guys keep getting thrown at, that the Astros ain't gonna be standing on the top row of the dugout when it happens? And you know why they would have to stand on the top row of the dugout? Because they gotta get people to stop throwing baseballs at them. Life ain't fair, man. And the trade in this was, we want to find out what happened. You tell us everything. That's what it was. What this was, in large part, if you've read anything, and Gabe, have you ever looked into these, like a Truth and Reconciliation Committee?
I have not.
Conceptually, they're interesting. South Africa, of course, did a big one. There was one in Greensboro, North Carolina over, I can't remember exactly what happened, but I watched a documentary about it at a film festival once. But the idea of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee is basically the only way that we're going to deal with what happened is just if everybody says what they did, right? And whatever is necessary to make everybody say what they did, this is what we're going to do. And that's kind of the approach that Rob Manfred took. Like, I feel like if in the beginning, if the commissioner had come out and said, hey, guys, here's what we got. Something happened, and for us, it is more important to find out what happened than anything else. And in order for us to find out what happened, we're going to have to grant immunity to every player so that we can know exactly what happened. And now we can prepare to try to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But what is more important to us than delivering punishment is now making sure that no one ever does this again. And I think if they had sold that point, they might have been better off in this, but they didn't sell it. They didn't get that part across to people. And so now everybody's bloodthirsty, wants vengeance. They about to throw your man Altuve out, and it sounds a lot like Altuve was the one dude who wasn't out here trying to do this. But there is that thing that was on his shirt that day. You see that where Correa said that, no, for real, Altuve's wife did not like him being shirtless, and that he had, like, a new tattoo on his collarbone.
Yeah, and then I also saw that people were tweeting out pictures of him without a tattoo, and then he actually came into the clubhouse yesterday, and Bob Nightingale of USA Today was tweeting out that Altuve did, in fact, have a tattoo.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, if he got a new tattoo within the last couple of weeks to further this lie, that is dedication.
That would be dedication. But the tattoo part doesn't matter to me one way or another. Whether he has it or not, I don't know if I buy that, you know, that part. I have found Correa overall in this to be honest. And I think that if you're Correa, I get where he's coming from, right? Like, Bellinger's like, Altuve cheated on the MVP. He's like, dude, Altuve hit 380 on the road and 310 at home. The rest of us are in on this. This is the one guy who was. And he's like, go ask Mike Fiers if Altuve was in on this. And by the way, I would like for somebody to do that, because I feel like that would really get to the bottom of a lot of this. There are dudes out there who said they didn't do it. This Tony Kemp dude, somebody else. Correa's like, yo, these are the guys that did not do it. I believe them on that. Now, his, it didn't matter. That's not why we won the World Series. That's a little trickier to try to sell, right? But I don't know. I think that everybody just knows what the right side is on this. And so they're just going to go out here and kill everybody for it. And now this commissioner, I don't know what he's supposed to do, man. He ain't built for this. He is not built for the level that he is having to deal with on this one single bit. The Astros owner, he wasn't built for this. He didn't really understand, like, how to handle this or what was going to be necessary when they said this in public. You got people out here filing lawsuits, talking about you ruined my career, like your ERA hadn't been over 6 in that season and the one before it. It's everything going on here. But let me ask you a question, Gabe. Is it going to make you watch one more baseball game than you would ordinarily?
No.
I'm just saying, if it's going to be a fight, it'll be in a jiff.
Yeah, but also, too, did you see Trevor Bauer have that big rant on social media about how MLB restricts what clips can go up on social and that how that's hurting the game?
I did not see him say that.
Yeah, he went in for like a minute or two just straight rant for some like off-brand media company where he was like just going in about how poorly MLB markets their players, and part of that is not allowing clips of important stuff and big like cool plays and stuff like that to surface on social media. So he's saying like, oh, if someone has a big dunk in a game, that gets up on social, you know, right away. But if someone has like an amazing game saving catch or whatever, that doesn't go up because MLB Advanced Media has like rights to all this stuff and they restrict it.
That's an interesting point. I gotta say this about Trevor Bauer, right? Like, one thing I hate is people who may agree with me or may dig something I say, you know, whatever. They might kind of rock with me on some level, maybe a micro level, maybe a macro level. And they always feel the need to point out on the front end, I don't agree with everything you say, comma, but, right? Like, I always feel like, I feel like when people do that, they just trying to make sure to tell the other white people that, you know, they ain't leaving the team. They just kind of like to dabble. You know what I mean? Like that's how it feels when they do that. And so I'm very attuned to that and, you know, kind of sensitive about it. And it takes everything in me not to do that when it comes to Trevor Bauer. Everything in me to not be that guy. Like, look, I ain't saying I rock with him, but because he say so much craziness, at least as far as I'm concerned, craziness. I'm always just want to be like, yeah, but. Right? He's right on that point, though. Did you see the thing Katie Nolan said on Highly Questionable? I thought I was the only one that did this. Where, you know, Trevor Bauer's Twitter handle is at Bauer Outage.
Yes.
And she said this on HQ, and I was like, oh, I'm not alone. Thank you. She's like, every time I see him pop up, I think it says Bauer Outrage because he's always outraged about something.
He is.
100% correct.
He is. By the way, you didn't want to know where Trevor Bauer went to school.
Do tell.
UCLA.
Really? That's a bit surprising.
Yeah, went to UCLA. He and both Garrett Cole as well.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about Garrett Cole and like his views on the world, but Trevor Bauer does not feel like Westwood.
Yeah, from L.A. as well.
Is he from L.A.? Is he from like Orange County?
Let me look this up.
We need to distinguish this.
Trevor Bauer. He's from North Hollywood.
That makes a little more sense.
Went to UCLA, Hart High School.
Yeah, North. Okay, that makes a little more sense. I can see how that happened.
People call that L.A., but is North Hollywood L.A.?
I feel like North Hollywood's in L.A. County. It's L.A. enough, right? Like, Orange County is a different place. And if you don't believe me, go ask the people of Orange County.
That's fair. Would you consider the Valley to be L.A.?
I would not, but the dilemma is, like, isn't, like, Burbank out there in the Valley?
Yes, it is.
The dilemma is a lot of what makes L.A. is out there.
Fair point.
Tough call. I'm not from there, by the way. I just know a couple things. We'll be back in a minute to talk about John Beilein, but first, tired of that 230 feeling? You're not alone. In fact, research shows that more than 70% of us hit the wall after lunch. Let a 5-hour energy shot help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, 5-hour energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. With zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hard-working people. Now it comes in 2 extra-strength tropical tastes. Strawberry banana and tropical burst. They're great. They are delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both, then go online to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. That's shop5hourenergy.com. Use the code BOMANI. Go to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10%. 5-Hour Energy. Energy on the go. Oh, man. Gabe, can you ever remember a story where a team soft-pedaled the coach would be out of here in a minute in the way that this has happened with the Cavs? No way that Beilein is the coach when we come back from the All-Star break, is there?
No, can't be. I mean, you cannot put that out there that the coach is thinking about stepping down.
Yes.
There's no road back. Absolutely none.
Well, especially when they already don't like you.
Yeah. Oh, right. My God.
Right. Like, if Steve Kerr said he was thinking about stepping down, that's different, right? But John Beilein, when we know that this is shaky to begin with, oh, no, baby. You got to go. Because let me tell you what's going to be in full effect when everybody comes back from vacation. A little something called Operation Shutdown. Now that he's like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Well, neither do we.
There's no, don't do it, coach.
No.
We're with you, coach.
It's over. Operation Shutdown is in full effect. I don't know what time practice going to start when they come back. And look, man, this is something that Beilein wasn't built for. That's all it was. He was not built for this. They lost the preseason game apparently really badly, and they said that they had Beilein taken all the way down. He didn't really know how to talk to and to communicate with players. There's the whole slugs and thugs situation. All of it. Just, this was not a man built to coach an NBA basketball team. Just wasn't. simply was not built to coach an NBA basketball team. And so now he's doing the slow play to get out. But I know what that play is, Gabe, and you know what it is too. 1 month before the NCAA tournament starts, John Beilein has instantly become the number one available coaching candidate on the market.
Now, in your opinion, in terms of joining mid-season, like that sort of thing happens quite often in the NBA where someone's having a bad season and like they bring an interim in or it's like, who's the best available coach?
That won't happen here. He's getting on the job for next year. Thing you got to remember is the NBA season doesn't end until after the college coaching carousel is done spinning.
Ah, there we go.
Right? So if he wants to go out here and get a job or be available for a job, his best move is to be unemployed going into the NCAA tournament. Right? Now, I threw it out there on television on Monday about him getting Archie Miller's job at Indiana, and the part that I missed on that is that Archie Miller got a $17 million buyout. But I know this. If they want it, they'll find the money. They're 6-8 in the Big Ten at the last time I checked at Indiana. That ain't what you signed up for. In what's this, year three for Archie? That ain't what you signed up for. So the idea that they could get him out of there and bring in Beilein? No, that can happen. Look, here's what Beilein going to do to Indiana once. One, he's going to play it clean, right? And the Indiana people care about this more than anybody else, I think, at that level. He's going to play it clean by the standards of NCAA cleanliness. The issue, though, with Beilein is that he cannot recruit high-level talent. But he can win like a guy who does recruit high-level talent. And Indiana's a place that can live with that. They'll be good with that if he can pull that off. Like, that job is tailor-made for John Beilein. Absolutely tailor-made for him. If I'm him, this is the play I'm making. I'm like, hey, get me out of here and let everybody know that's got a job worth a damn anywhere near the Midwest or in the Big East, and I'll go take your job. Like, can you think of anything comparable, Gabe, to like what it must be like to go from trying to coach college basketball team to an NBA team? Because I feel like this about football, and you tell me if this makes sense. In college, it's like 85 guys on scholarship plus walk-ons, and in the NFL, it's 53 guys. And in the NFL, you do have to treat the players differently because the power dynamics are different, but they're not that much different between college and the pros. And so there's some things you can get away with in college that you can't get away with in the pros, but in the end, it's still a big old giant group, and people understand kind of the need for forced conformity in a big old giant group because that's the only way to maintain some semblance of order. But going from college where you have all that power and everybody has to do what you say to going to the NBA where you don't actually have any power, you're just kind of in charge, whoo, that's got to be jarring.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, like, how it really worked for him when he was a college coach, and if, like, a lot of the things that he said and got in trouble for saying when he's an NBA coach, if, like, he actually did say them when he was a college coach and they just let it slide because he was the man.
So, get ready to break out the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Okay, so this is what my thought was when Beilein got caught in that situation, right? And I can't remember if I said this here, but I do believe this. I believe that he meant to say slugs, right? From the context and everything that's been offered, I believe that he meant to say slugs. Everybody in the room says he said thugs, and so I believe that he also said thugs. And the only thing that one can reasonably conclude from that is, so you know how in autocorrect, you could type a word right in autocorrect, but it turned it into the other word because the other word is one that you use more. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Like, that's what it sounds like happened, is that he did mean to say slugs, but he clearly has said thugs before. Because otherwise, I don't see how that doesn't trip over, especially to the point where you don't notice that it happened, right? And look, as much as we know thugs as being a bit of coded language, I'm not going to sit up in here and pretend that saying thug is the same thing as saying the N-word. And here's the difference. The difference is there is such a thing as a thug. There is no such thing as an N-word. Like a thug exists. Like there's something, a fairly concrete definition to what that is. The N-word is a creation in a way that thug simply is not. So there are people who are, in fact, thugs. You know? Watch the trouble you're going to get in trying to explain who is, in fact, an N-word, right? So these are not comparable terms. One is, in a way, a you can say for some people, a softer signal of the other. And it normally does come with, like, some level of connotation. But my point being that I'm not really trying to cast aspersions on John Beilein's character by saying that he has used thugs before. A man of his age, by the way, would call somebody a slug, but a man of his age and whatever his experience is, it wouldn't shock me in the least if he ain't never given no second thought to linguistically what he is saying if he were to say thug. Like, it wouldn't shock me in the least. But let me tell you who was given a great deal of thought about that. The dudes on an NBA roster. They've considered this deeply, John Beilein. They have, and there wasn't no coming back from that. Like, even if they forgave him, there wasn't no coming back from that.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from finance.
I'm Michelle Singletary, the personal finance columnist for the Washington Post. It turns out that many young adults who are often unfairly criticized and stereotyped for their avocado toast cravings and spendthrift ways are actually saving for retirement. Fidelity Investments issued their fourth quarter report on how people are saving for their retirement. It turns out that young adults, millennials, are doing their part to save for their future. They contributed $373 million to IRAs in the fourth quarter. That's a 46% increase over the total amount contributed for the same period in 2018. In fact, the average balance for young adults is $32,700. And listen, going back to the fourth quarter for 2009, the average balance was just $7,300. So they're doing a great job in saving for retirements. And they're overwhelmingly putting their money into Roth IRAs, according to Fidelity. No, basically a Roth account is funded with after-tax dollars, making future withdrawals tax-free. And this is a great report because it shows that despite all the stereotypes that young adults are just wasting their money at bars and avocado toast, that they're really concerned about their retirement just like everybody else. Now, having $32,000, you might think, oh, that's not a lot. But starting out in their 20s and 30s, over a 30-year or more career, they can end up being millionaires.
Yo, good for them. And, yo, man, I feel like you millennial kids can't win because I hear this story about all they saving, they do it for retirement, and I'm like, yo, you might need that money right now. I don't even know what good that gonna do you then. It might not be no world.
Yeah, especially too with like entitlements.
Just saying though, in 60 years, I don't know what we gonna have for you to retire to.
Yeah, fair point. Might need to live it up now while you got it.
That's what I'm saying. You might have stacked all that money up and be like, now finally you can afford a one bedroom apartment.
Yeah, whenever I go down to Miami, I'm like, damn, why don't people live here? You know, why doesn't everybody live here? This is a great place to be. And then I was like, you know what? If I invested in some property, it wouldn't be here 50, 60 years from now. That's probably not a good investment. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to be here 50, 60 years from now either. So might as well live it up.
Something to be said for that.
All right. This next story comes from tech.
Hey, this is Grant Martin, a contributor to Forbes. Last week, we published a story about a new type of lounge experience coming to airports across the United States. Nintendo is planning to launch four airport lounges in which travelers can stop in and play video games on the new Nintendo Switch while they wait for their flights. Since the Switch is really built for mobile gaming, Nintendo wants to show off how travelers can use the platform in a unique mobile place, like at the airport or maybe on the subway on the way to work. And to do that, they're targeting the captive audience that you'll find at the airport. Now, compared to airline lounges, which can cost $50 to $100 for daily access, and which include things like free snacks and drinks, the Nintendo lounges are going to be free. Travelers will have access to standalone Switches, as well as those plugged into TVs, and they'll also be able to play games like Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and Super Mario Party. The new lounges are expected to launch soon in Dallas Love, Washington Dulles, SeaTac, and Chicago O'Hare.
All I'm hearing from that is a whole lot of people missing their flights.
It is a really interesting idea, though.
It's a great idea.
To set it up as like a pop-up so that people can kind of sample it out and be like, oh, you know what? This is kind of nice when I have a little bit of time on my hands.
Yeah, no, and actually I think it's cool like for gamer types to like meet people. Like especially if you're a business traveler who's also like a childlike game player. No disrespect, but you know what I mean, right? And so you can go out there, you know, you can do a little networking in there on the Nintendo Switch. But I don't you know how all this works, man. But I imagine some battles going to get cracking in there, man, and people going to miss their flights.
When our man said that Zelda was going to be one of the games, I was like, damn, people are really going to be missing their flights. If they're getting started with career mode and all those sorts of adventure mode in these games.
They're still making Zeldas?
Yeah.
How has this never happened before now that I think about it? Or maybe it did happen before and I just wasn't old enough to see it. And I think it would be cracking if they got it back now. Why is there not an arcade at the airport?
I've never seen one.
Yo, why is there? Yo, you realize how dope it would be if you could go in and play Mortal Kombat 2 at the airport? Like you just go and get you some tokens. You got like an hour or so to kill. You realize how incredible it would be to be doing this at like... Why is there not an arcade at the airport?
I might need to cut this from the podcast so we can like sell this
idea.
Yo,
it's a great point. Here's the only problem with the arcade at the airport. It's a great way to get your stuff taken. Y'all locked in there trying to hit that 10-hit combo. Where my bag at? Right? Like I say, your stuff is taken. I know that ain't no word. Taken.
All right, so this last story, it's also from finance. According to a new survey fielded by Salary Finance of over 2,700 U.S. adults working at companies with over 500 employees, for about a third of Americans, 32% are running out of money before their next paycheck hits. This is still with about 31% of respondents earning over $100K a year, also regularly experiencing a budget shortfall before payday. Bo, your thoughts?
One, I'm curious, like, where some of these people live. Because in New York City, the idea of making 100 G's a year and running out of money is not at all inconceivable. I think for some of you listeners in some of the places you live, that sounds insane. But, man, to live in cities these days, especially people with these loans to pay back, I got to say I can see it. Like, I don't think these people are necessarily doing anything wrong or necessarily being irresponsible. I think they're, I mean... There's probably some measure of, I don't want to call it irresponsibility, but probably a couple bad decisions, right? Because we're humans and humans are allowed to make bad decisions here and there. You should not have to do everything perfectly in order to be able to live and survive, especially on $100,000 a year. Now, $100,000 a year ain't what it used to be. And I think that's an important point too. Like, I ever tell you my thing about the word millionaire?
You have not.
Okay, so here's the thing about the term millionaire. Millionaire, when people use it in the language, they don't really mean having $1 million. Because the term millionaire is derived from a time where $1 million was so much more money than it is right now. So like calling somebody a millionaire in 1950 is totally different than calling somebody a millionaire in 2020, but we use the word the exact same way. You see what I mean? And so when Bernie Sanders, people are like, yo, Bernie Sanders made $3 million in that whatever time period it was. I mean, I'm not saying that's not a lot of money, but I ain't saying that it is either. It sounds like more than it does because our concept of what it is to have $1 million is not literally about the $1 million. It is figuratively about the idea of $1 million. And so having $1 million now does not mean the same thing that it used to. But the same thing applies to like the idea of making $100K. Like remember, $100K used to be like this line that you got to. Like, oh man, he's making $100K now, right? Like that's the place that you get to. And we still think of 100K in the way that we used to think of it, but it doesn't mean the same thing anymore. You know, like it means something different. So like the idea that many people make $100,000 are running out of money before payday totally makes sense, especially given all the things that people got to do now in order to get to the point of making $100,000 a year. Chances are you taking all some serious loans. We'll be back in a minute to do the social segment, but first, you think some once-in-a-blue-moon moment should happen more than once in a blue moon? Like catching up with friends you don't see all the time, checking out one of your favorite artists live in concert, Blue Moon is on a mission to celebrate and inspire more of those moments. Just like those looking for the special in the everyday, Blue Moon takes a twist on the traditional Belgian wit. Blue Moon was created during the 1995 baseball season at the Sandlot Brewery at Coors Field in Denver, Colorado. Blue Moon founder and brewmaster was inspired by the flavorful Belgian wits he enjoyed while studying brewing in Brussels. Valencia orange peel for a subtle sweetness and coriander for balance with oats that create a smooth, creamy finish. It brings a one-of-a-kind appearance and bright taste. So why the name Blue Moon? As someone was tasting the beer, they said, a beer this good only comes around once in a blue moon. Once in a blue moon should happen more than once in a blue moon. So whenever you reach for a blue moon, be reminded of the extraordinary. The next time you're out with friends or you're just enjoying a night in, reach for a blue moon. It's the beer you can enjoy every day. You can have Blue Moon delivered by going to get.bluemoonbeer.com and find delivery options near you. Blue Moon. Reach for the moon. Celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado, ALE.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So for this voicemail segment idea, are you aware of the situation that happened over the weekend with the TikTok girls and NBA All-Star, that sort of thing?
I am.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. People were talking about, oh, they stole the original person's idea. She's much better at it. Also, too, when I was looking at this, isn't that what they call cultural appropriation?
That is what's happening here. I mean, what is happening here is this young lady in Atlanta came up with this, and then everybody else started doing it, and then people just act like it came out of nowhere.
And then the white girls get famous for doing it.
Correct. Correct. I was watching something that they were on. Was it the All-Star game?
Yeah, they got interviewed.
Yeah, they was on the court.
Yeah, and
who brought them out, by the way?
I can't remember.
Was it Aaron Gordon?
Aaron Gordon was trying to talk of them up.
See, and that's what I'm saying. Like, Aaron Gordon brought him out there. Like, hey, man, you could have called a little mama that did it for real. But he a Karl Malone fan. He is. He a Karl Malone fan.
Well, in light of this, we decided to ask the listeners what was the best idea that they had that they believe got stolen by someone else.
And to be fair, this young lady doesn't believe it got stolen. It got stolen.
Yeah. Highlight that before we get into these interesting and very interesting claims we're about to get into. our first guy didn't believe his name, but he was hilarious.
Yo, what up, Bo? Man, tell me some John Louisville. Yo, check it. So in fourth grade, me and my best friend one day was like, hey, man, let's turn our shirts around. And so we was rocking our shirts backwards, man, and you know what's about to come next. Man, yo, I'm 38. I swear, like, yo, 3-4 weeks later, the crisscross video come out, and everybody like, ah, y'all stole that crisscross. Man, we had been doing that for like a month. I don't even know how they figured it out. But, man, Bo just took all our shine and made us look like biters. Peace, man.
The best part is, and they made us look like biters, because that actually had to be the most annoying thing. Like, you had done this yourself. And now you look like you just catching away.
Man, I don't know how they found out. Yeah, they were at the elementary school, my man. That's where they were.
I mean, I believe that he was doing it before them. But I don't know how they found out.
Ooh, we may have to do this one again too, sometime in the future, because there are some good ones.
Well, also, I had trouble uploading it to Instagram. And so we didn't get as much coverage on this. Like, there are people that don't know about this because I couldn't do the normal, like, promotion for it.
Oh, boy. And we didn't get as many, but all the ones we got were good. So our next comes from Rich.
A lot of us out here, you know, we, do music. Personally, I rap and make beats. So it was 2006, and I made a beat that ended up, you know, using the same sample as 3 years later, it would be Jay-Z and Alicia Keys' Empire State of Mind. So when I heard that song come on the radio, I was furious. I was mad. I didn't have the connections, and I just wanted my credit. Never got it, but, I'm hopefully, y'all will recognize right now that 3 years before that, you know, I did it first. Me, I, him.
Yo, this is a common story, by the way. I laugh because I've seen this happen and heard this happen many times. You had the sample. You didn't have a song.
What's funny about that, too, is I had the sample, right? So you had the sample. That came from something else.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, it's an art to getting that chop right and everything else. Like, I believe him 100% that this happened because I've talked to so many producers where they're like, yo, like, because that's the thing, you know, cats will be digging for samples or whatever, and then you mess around and find out, damn, somebody already got it. Like, I got one song I've already said, if I ever did a beat, it's the joint that I would sample, and then I found out that somebody already did it. Now, Pimp C, for what it's worth, when they were doing, I'm trying to remember, was it International Players Anthem? Yeah, it was for International Players Anthem. He's like, yo, I want to do a song over that beat. And they're like, yo, Project Pat already did a song over that beat. And he's like, well, we going to do a song over that beat too.
Now I want to know what the song was that you had the sample for.
One day.
This last one comes from Matt in Jamaica, Queens.
Listen, I know exactly how that little girl on TikTok felt because I am the original inventor of the sneaker with the spinning rim in it. I know, but just hear me out. So it's 2000, right? Me, my cousins, and my boys from next door, we all sitting on the stoop. And we talking about how much we love spinning rims, because, you know, this is the year 2000, spinning rims is popping. They in every rap video, is off the chain, and we like, yo, when we get older, we gonna get spinning rims in our cars, all that, right? So I'm like, yo, wouldn't it be dope if there was spinning rims in a sneaker? And everybody was like, yo, Matt, that joint sound crazy. So I go in the house, man, I take out the pencils. I even had coloring pencils, bro, with the red and the blue and all that. And, yo, I, like, drew my own sneaker with the spinning rim on it, had that joint looking proper. So we chilling outside on the stoop again. This is a few months later. My boy tell me, yo, you know Spreewell coming out with some sneakers that got spinning rims on it? What? Yo, Spreewell, he must have had the bug in the bushes or something, stole my idea. Bro, that was my idea. Them Dada Supremes, those was mine. I know Spreewell ain't make that much money off of them, but still, they deserve to be mine.
That is the highest thing I have ever heard in my life.
Dada Supremes, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't believe he's lying. I mean, I believe he's telling the truth. Cause dude, when he talked about breaking out the pencils, even the colored pencils, like he really was hit with a moment of motivation, right? Like, and he's the way he talked about that conversation and everything like that. Come on, man. I know what's going on here. Wow. That was amazing.
High times.
Dude, that brought me so much joy because he really broke it all the way down. Then looks up and his idea is gone.
You didn't have any Dada Supremes, did you, in 2000?
No.
You want to know who was sponsored by Dada Supreme?
Do tell.
One Chris Webber.
That's right.
You want to know who's growing up in the North Bay area in the year 2000? Your boy.
You had your Dadas?
I did. I didn't have a pair of the Spree with the little spinning rims on them.
Yes.
But the Dada Supremes coming out in the East Bay mag where they had like 50
yes.
different colors.
Yes.
And they were trying to break into the game on like the school sponsorship.
Yes.
Like everybody can wear Dada Supremes. You got it this color, that color. Everybody get a pair of Dada Supremes. I think I had a pair of like white and black ones, like very basic. But there were C-webs.
This is what an amazing day. This is a great show. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Michelle Singletary of The Washington Post. Check out her column on millennials racking up retirement savings with Roth IRAs. Also, thanks to Grant Martin of Forbes. Check out his story on Nintendo opening up pop-up video game lounges at the airport. And thank you to Gabe for reading that story about people, you know, running out of money before payday. Thank you to our sponsors, My Computer Career. Thank you. Thank you to ZipRecruiter. Thank you to 5-Hour Energy. And thank you to Blue Moon. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.